This is the story of the one. As a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility, he knows keeping the line up and running is a top priority. So just like you, he chooses Grainger. Because when a drive belt gets damaged, Grainger makes it easy to find the exact specs for the replacement product he needs. And next day delivery helps ensure he'll have everything in place and running like clockwork. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
The 1986 New York Mets dominated the major league landscape that season, both in performance and attitude, ultimately capturing the World Series title thanks to a whole lot of talent and a little bit of luck.
So the winning run is at second base with two out, 3-2 to Mookie Wilson. Little roller up along first, behind the bag, it gets through Buckner.
Filmmaker Heather Quinlan, whose latest project is called 86 Mets the Movie, joins us now. If you could, Heather, describe financially what helped launch this project and get it to where it is now.
Well, it all started when I became friends with a man named Michael Whitehorn, who is the creator of King of Queens. And we were talking about possible projects that we wanted to work on together. And I told him I had wanted to do this documentary, and he said, I'm a Yankee fan, but this is a great idea. So he had seen a previous documentary I'd done, and he gave me some investment money to get it off the ground.
The Mets that year, 1986, won a league-best 108 games, won the National League East by 21.5 games. It was truly a dominant team with Gary Carter, Keith Hernandez, Daryl Strawberry, Dwight Gooden, just to name a few, managed by Davey Johnson. But it was also a very brash and belligerent team, both on and off the field. Brawls, curtain calls, arrests, making them easily the most hated team in the league. Was that style and that attitude displeasing to fans or the local media in any way, or was it a situation where as long as they win, it's all good?
I think it fed into their mythology. I think it was all part of who they were. And, yes, especially if you're winning and you're engaging in bad behavior, it's almost like you're the anti-hero. You're the good guy with a touch of the bad guy, like a wink of the bad guy kind of thing. But, you know, if they lost 108 games and they were boozing and brawling and getting arrested, I don't think they would have the same kind of fan reaction. This would be remembered in quite the same way as they are today. I mean, I think the winning and the arrogance, which, you know, was kind of a charming arrogance in its own way, I guess, although I say that as a Met fan. I'm sure if I rooted for another team, I wouldn't feel it was charming arrogance, but I think they all went hand in hand with each other. Definitely was pleasing to journalism, sold a lot of papers.
The music video the team did during the season, I guess that was baseball's answer to the Chicago Bears Super Bowl shuffle. Several players were featured on national magazines and commercials. But talk about how important the team was to New York City and how the city so easily connected and still does, in fact, connect with this team.
Well, there were parallels between the 86 Mets being kind of dirty and gritty and the city at that time being dirty and gritty. It was Ed Koch's New York. This was before Giuliani and before the city was cleaned up to the extent that it has been and that baseball has been cleaned up to the extent that it has been. You certainly couldn't get sushi at Shea Stadium, or if you could, I wouldn't eat it ever.
That's right.
it was a much different world back then, as well. I mean, for better or for worse, you could smoke anywhere, you know, there were looser drinking laws, that kind of thing. So I think New York, in the absence of the Yankee team back then, was also a good team. It was a quality team. But Don Mattingly did not have the charisma of a Keith Hernandez. There wasn't really that kind of, you know, feeling on the Yankees as there was on the Mets. And so the city really, really gravitated toward them. And it was really the only time since the Mets have started that they were the number one baseball team in the city.
I read that you were 12 years old during the 1986 season. And as a personal side note, my father was 13 in 1969, the year, of course, of the Miracle Mets and the franchise's only other title. And he easily connects better with that team than the 86 team. And my guess is that that's a common theme, that the older Mets fans are more fond of 1969, obviously, if they were able to witness it, whereas the younger ones connect with 1986 because that might be the only one that they can relate to.
Well, I think it has to do with the age that the team wins at. You know, if the Mets win the World Series this year, obviously I'll be thrilled, but it won't be with the same kind of unbelievable passion that I had as a 12-year-old, because, which sounds ironic, even though I'm making a movie about them. You know, as you get older, you have more responsibilities. You have bills, you have a job, this, that, and the other. When you're that age, the age I was, or the age your dad was, that's like your whole world. And so I think that has a lot to do with the fact that by the time 86 rolls around, he was that much older, and I'm sure, you know, couldn't devote the time and the passion to baseball like he could in 1969.
It's kind of funny, and I almost hate saying this, but if the team during the 1980s had fulfilled the high expectations that they were given and had won maybe, you know, say two titles in 4 years or three in 5 years, the 86 championship, even knowing how dramatic the postseason was, wouldn't stand out as much. Because it was the only one during that era, it means so much more, and then therefore I think that this film is kind of, it's a project worth, that's going to be worth watching.
Oh, well, thank you. And yeah, absolutely. If it had been the dynasty that everyone had predicted it would be, obviously 86 would be a piece of a larger puzzle, and not the only piece of the puzzle. So, yeah, there is a certain kind of melancholy, I guess you would say, about it as well, a bittersweetness. You know, I think what really brought down the team in the end was drugs. It was the partying. It was the thing that made them, you know, charming in that bad boy kind of way. That's really what did them in. Mm-hmm. You look at someone like, you know, the Yankees of Giuliani's era, were not the bad boys like the Mets were, but they won games, and they won consistently, and you didn't see Derek Jeter, you know, getting arrested for a fist fight at a place called Cooters, like you did the Mets in Houston. So, you know, I guess, like everything else in life, it's a compromise. It seems you can get, you know, your bad boys for a year, or you can get your good guys for a dynasty.
Lenny Dykstra, the man they call Nails on the Mets ball club, is waiting. Now the pitch, and a high fly ball hit the right field. It is fairly deep. It's way back by the wall.
He did it! It's a home run! A home run! The Mets win the ball game. Dykstra hits a home run. Lynn Dykstra hit a home run. This ball game is over.
Now, you spoke to Dwight Gooden, Daryl Strawberry, Lenny Dykstra, Kevin Mitchell were some of the players that you interviewed. Also, Bill Buckner and Mookie Wilson together, and I'll ask more about that conversation in a minute. You also interviewed celebrities such as you said, Giuliani. But what did you learn most from your interviews and your interactions with the former players and the other interview subjects?
Well, you know, it's tough because you don't get a lot of time with them. him. And, you know, for instance, Doc Darrell, Mookie, and Bill Buckner, I had about 30 minutes or so to interview them each, 30 to 40, Dykstra as well. And they don't know you from anyone else. So it takes a good 15 minutes or so for them to build up some kind of, I guess, trust thing with you that you're not, you know, so you know what you're talking about. And that, you know, just that they know where you're coming from, or is this going to be another thing asking me about cocaine, or, you know, that kind of thing. So, you know, you really have to work very hard to get a lot out of them as quickly as possible. I suppose the things that surprised me the most, Kevin Mitchell surprised me the most. The one who was considered the worst, I guess, morally on the team, was probably the greatest guy I came across, besides from Mookie Wilson, who is just a wonderful guy, but that's no surprise to anyone.
No.
Kevin Mitchell, I adored. I adored him. He was a great interview. He donates a lot of his time and his money to helping inner-city kids learn how to play baseball. He coaches at a batting cages in San Diego, which is where I interviewed him. And, you know, asked nothing of me, asked nothing of the project. You know, he was just happy to talk about it. He said the Mets never asked him to come back for any sort of reunion, never asked anything of him. You know, it's like they still think he was the one who brought down Doc and Darryl. So I wouldn't say, you know, he stays up at night upset about that, but, you know, it is, I guess it is a sore spot for him to a degree, but he was definitely the biggest surprise of all the people I came across, the most different from all the people I came across. And I also, I don't know if you saw, I also interviewed Ed Hearn and Calvin Schiraldi.
Okay, yeah, I saw that too.
That was an interesting, I flew to Kansas where Ed Hearn lived, and we flew Calvin up from Texas, and they all talked about Kevin Mitchell, and what the three of them roomed together in AA Jackson,
mm-hmm.
And I don't know if, well, I guess I had a clip of Kevin Mitchell talking about this, but Schiraldi used to say to Mitchell, if I were ever going to, you know, pitch against you, this is what I would throw. And it was like, I would throw you sliders because you cannot hit sliders. And when Mitchell was called up to bat during game six and Schiraldi was facing him, he threw him a slider and Mitchell hit it.
Now, Bill Buckner and Mookie Wilson, the pair obviously forever linked in baseball history. And over the past few years, Buckner has been more willing to do interviews, signings, in which he kind of acknowledges the infamous error. Do you agree with the notion that Met fans and players, I should say, disdain any mockery of him and are overall sympathetic towards him, and we don't necessarily identify the ground ball through his legs as the reason the Mets won Game 6? There were a lot of other things that led to it, Calvin Schiraldi's failure to get one guy out being one of them, that led to the ending, whereas the Red Sox, certainly prior to 2004, make Buckner out to be the scapegoat and almost singularly blamed him, not just for Game 6's loss, but also the series loss.
Yeah, well, I think the Sox fans took it personally, almost, like Buckner was doing this to hurt them individually. Obviously he wasn't, it was an error. And I don't even think that McNamara, although, and I will tell you, Schiraldi tore McNamara apart as a manager. I thought he was a terrible manager. I don't even think it was necessarily a bad thing that he had Buckner out there. I mean, Buckner's glove was literally just centimeters away from the ball. It had nothing to do with him having bad knees or bad ankles or whatever. I think what annoys Mookie Wilson is that he's known for that error, too. He's not known for all the stolen bases or all the hits or whatever he amassed during his career. He's only known for that error, too.
And he's not even known for the at-bat in which he fouled, what, five or...
In which he got a terrific at-bat, in which he got out of the way of a wild pitch. I mean, all those things, but he kept them in the game. He's only known for Buckner's error. So That really bothers him. And I think what bothers Met fans is in the 29 years since that happened, a lot of people think that that was the last play of the World Series. They misremember it. And they think that, of course, the Mets won on a stupid error by the Red Sox because they are never good enough to win like a normal team. So I think that's part of what irks Met fans in that, you know, not only did we battle back from unbelievable odds to win that game, but we still had a whole other game to win. And we were still behind in that game as well.
Now the pitcher on the way, hit in the air, Rice is there and has it for the out. And the Red Sox are 2 outs away from a championship. And a fly ball to center, Henderson going back under it now. He has it, two men down. Everybody sitting very quietly in that New York Mets dugout, hoping, I guess, hope that something will start to happen.
You know, Game 6 is one of those moments. You know, there are a few moments in history where you can, and I'm talking about history overall, where you can easily recall where you were and who you were with when it happened. And for Mets fans, Game 6 of the World Series is that game, is the moment. And, you know, if you were asked about, if you had asked about 4 million different Mets fans of a certain age, they might all say that they were there at Shea Stadium on that Saturday night, even though Shea can only fit about 57,000. So, for you, where were you, and what do you remember most about that game?
I went to bed. I couldn't take it. I missed it. I totally missed it. I couldn't take it anymore. I had lost faith. I went to bed. And all of a sudden, I heard my mom screaming. My mom was a huge Met fan. I am a Met fan because of my mother. The rest of the family are Yankee fans, except for my mom. And I heard my mom screaming. And I ran into the living room, and I saw the whole slow motion replay over and over again. And she told me what happened. So this is sort of my penance, I feel like, doing this movie for losing faith in them and for missing that moment. I did sit through all of Game 7, although I was tempted to leave again, but I was like, I can't do it again. So where was I in Game 6? I was in bed. I will say I was at the ticker tape parade and Dwight Gooden wasn't, so there's one trade-off. Yeah. I did make it to that. You know, I interviewed Ed Cranepool, who was on the 69 Mets. He believed the 69 Mets were a better team than the 86 Mets, but I asked him where he was in Game 6, and he was in bed, too. I think he was a little jealous.
Are there any potential interview subjects who you're planning, either planning to interview or you would like to get?
Well, we're interviewing Jim Brewer next week. So, really happy about that. We are working on still getting the approval of Major League Baseball. Major League Baseball is in a very tough nut to crack. And so I've had to really bring in the big guns to kind of get them to say yes. Without MLB approval, I can't even use the Mets logo, much less show footage of Game 6.
Oh, wow.
So, and with MLB comes the Mets, comes Keith Hernandez. You know, obviously, I need to interview Keith Hernandez. I do have more players I would like to interview. I would like to interview some of the players, not just on the Sox or the Mets, but, you know, like Ozzie Smith or people who, you know, our other big rivals back then were the Cardinals, and talk to a couple guys from 86 Cardinals. You know, obviously, I'd love to get Jerry Seinfeld. I feel like if we get MLB approval, it'd be easier to get Jerry Seinfeld. And, you know, just I'm going to have a day of interviewing the fans, a lot who contributed to my Kickstarter campaign about their 86 memories and memorabilia and all that kind of stuff. So we should be looking to wrap by this fall, hopefully.
So, yeah, that was going to lead to my next question. I know you're planning to roll out with the film in 2016, mark, obviously, the 30th anniversary of the championship season. Do you know specifically when in 2016 that we might be able to see it?
I don't know specifically when. I would say probably, you know, I would aim for sometime around when the season begins. Then again, depending on the distribution model that happens that we do, they may not want to release it until the 30th anniversary of Game 6. So, you know, we could be talking another year, although I doubt it would be that long. So, remains to be seen yet, but it'll definitely be next year.
And you may have answered this question just a few minutes ago. What are your hopes in terms of distribution, you know, showing the film, and have the Mets reached out themselves with any support of any kind?
No, the Mets have not been terribly supportive. No, it's a funny thing with the Mets. You know, I was talking to someone about them the other day. They don't celebrate their past the way, like, the Yankees do. The Yankees have, like, retired almost every single member they could. The Mets front office, I don't know if it's the drug aspect that I think they try and shy away from, but they really don't celebrate 86 anywhere close to the way that I think that they should. I mean, even just the players alone, the only active player, now Gil Hodges was 62. The only real, like, long-term player whose number is retired is Tom Seaver. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that was quite a long time ago that he pitched for the Mets. But, yeah, there hasn't been a lot of help from the Mets. I do have a friend named Eric Sherman who's writing a book on 86. In fact, he just finished it, which will be out next year. He had co-written Mookie's book that came out last year. And he didn't even get any support from the Mets. So, he just had to, you know, go on his own and interview everyone. So distribution-wise, you know, I'd love to have it in some festivals. I would love to see it, you know, I think it would be perfect for a 30 for 30, especially in the 30th anniversary. I mean, how many more 30s do you want? So that would be ideal, you know. I'd like to kind of elevate the team into a status that it hadn't been at before, whether that's a public television status or a film festival status or what. I really don't know yet, but that remains to be seen once we wrap up.
The team's status among Mets fans couldn't be any higher, as the best and most unique in franchise history. Thanks to Heather Quinlan for joining us, and thanks to you for listening to Baseball As It Was.
He struck him out! Struck him out! The Mets have won the World Series! And they're jamming and crowding all over Jesse Orozco. The dream has come true. The Mets have won the World Series, coming from behind to win the seventh ballgame.
You're listening to Leaf Filter Radio, and the guru of gutter protection himself, Chris Counihan, is here to take your most pressing leaf-related questions.
Hey, everybody, Chris here. I understand we have Ron on the line. Ron, where are you calling from?
Uh-oh. Ron, are you calling from a ladder?
Well, I was. I wanted to ask Chris what I need to do to get my gutters ready to have leaf filter installed.
Oh, Ron, you don't have to do anything. A leaf filter trusted pro will come out and clean out your gutters, realign and seal your gutters, and install leaf filter, America's number one gutter protection system.
So I didn't need to get on this ladder?
Ron, leaf filter trusted pros are in your neighborhood and ready to help. Just visit leaffilter.com/day to schedule your free gutter inspection and get up to 30% off.
Thank goodness. What was that site?
That's leaffilter.com/day for your free gutter inspection today. See representative for warranty details. Promotion is 20% off plus a 10% senior or military discount. One discount per household.